It is variously polluted before it reaches the body. Therefore, it comes to the body depressed and debilitated by the fields through which it passes. And if we have extreme psychic stress or exceeding emotional or mental tension, a large part of this energy may be drained off before it reaches the body, with the result that we have a physical fatigue arising from psychic stress. If the energy is unable to get through at all, or very little of it gets through, then we have physical exhaustion as a result of the dissipation of this energy in negative thoughts and emotions. If we are therefore concerned with health problems, we have this to consider. We also realize that, as in the Indian philosophies and in Zen and in a great many other rather deep systems which have been developed through the ages, among the American Indian medicine priests, this point was also rather clearly given to us, that actually the focusing of energy in the medicine priest or in the meditating mystic or in the Zen monk, that this focusing of energy and the directing of this energy does not result in exhaustion. The exhaustion arises from the fact that the individual is pushing from his own energy supply alone. If he is pushing with that part of energy which is already locked in him, the supply is limited. But if instead of pushing, he relaxes and permits universal energy to move through him, the supply is limitless. And he is in no danger of psychic fatigue as the result of the process. Opens himself and permits energy to move unobstructed through his own nature, he finds that a torrent of universal life can flow through him, and yet he will not be exhausted because he is not working with his own limited supply. If he is able to be quiet, if he is able to be still, if he is able to relax, he forms his best relationship with energy. He releases gradually the obstructions in the body also, because tension is the beginning of obstruction in the majority of instances. Tension depresses function. Tension injures digestion, assimilation, and excretion. And where these are interfered with, trouble is almost certain to follow. The majority of individuals begin to die first in the intestinal tract, and then it spreads. The same thing means that the individual in trouble nearly always has to center his attention upon the freeing of the body from the tension that prevents proper elimination of waste. If he is able to clear this area, nature will probably be able to take care of the rest. It is to prevent the building up of poison. Tension builds up poison. Tension can be trouble with others, or it can simply be trouble with ourselves. It can frequently also be merely involvement. That kind of twisting, turning, involved, knotted, snarled type of mind, which is unable to simplify its own processes and has never been able to arrive at the simple fact that two and two make four without an argument. This kind of mind wastes its own energy and locks itself against the very life which it needs for proper function. Thus, negative habits of emotion and thought do interfere with the distribution of energy through the magnetic fields. We have often been asked about things like blood transfusions and infusions and things of this nature, as to how legitimate they are and what they actually mean. It is the sworn duty of the son of Asclepius to preserve life if he can. Therefore, in many instances, there are probabilities that infusion or transfusion may be valuable. It is again a battle of energies. But the energy in the blood, which is used for a transfusion, is separated from its source of life. Therefore, it must come under the magnetic field of the individual into whose body it is introduced. There is a little battle here, and gradually the living organism takes control and imposes its own magnetic field upon the material brought in by transfusion. In the interval, however, there has been known to be a certain minor degree of psychic phenomena in which there is an appearance or a suggestion that the introduction of the foreign blood causes a moment of mental confusion. Sometimes almost a sense of sympathy with the person from whom the blood was taken. This passes very quickly, however, because the dynamic vital center of the body receiving the blood takes over, and its magnetism gradually overwhelms the negative or opposing magnetism of the infused blood. Thus, the individual takes over again and carries on his own existence. But the blood certainly does carry within it one kind of this magnetic agent, which is present in many forms and in many levels and degrees in the complicated structure of man. This all points then to the one situation that we're coming around to, and that is the systems or means by which a magnetism can be used and, to a measure, is being used in modern therapy. A very great part of biochemistry is closer to the magnetic theory than we realize, inasmuch as biochemistry functions upon a principle that can be reconciled with the idea of the magnetic poles of chemical elements and nutritional elements. If we recognize that every time we take a certain form of nutrition into the body, we are setting up a magnetic field, we then realize, as it has been known for a long time ago, that man does not live actually upon the physical food that he takes in. He lives upon the magnetic fields which are generated in himself by this food. He lives because certain types of magnetism are increased by the introduction of certain foods into the body. These foods become magnets, and the food elements and the chemical elements which they contain and the nutritional elements become centers which draw energy from space. Therefore, nutrition is actually the setting up of a system by which the proper energy can be drawn from space to nourish the individual. To develop this science, then, is really a form of space feeding. And in time, we shall probably derive most of our nutrition from space. It is only a matter of time when our present sources of nutrition will be inadequate. We are worried considerably concerning the gradual depletion of soil. We're using all kinds of synthetic and artificial means to restore the fertility and the richness of soil. But these artificial methods result finally in the food that we eat being simply synthetic, in which we have lost certain basic chemical factors. For example, you have, for instance, two types of a material that can be given to you in medication or nutrition. One is a genuine, naturally produced form. The other is a synthetically produced form, resulting from a careful analysis of the original and the complete reproduction of it by artificial means in chemistry in the laboratory. Working with the synthetics and with the genuine material, it is already not too soon to point out that the synthetics cannot be adequately regulated. The synthetic material contains every known element of the original. Yet the synthetic material does not, in most cases, cause an identical reaction. The synthetic has something different. And as one biochemist who has worked for one of the largest pharmaceutical houses in the United States told me, he said, in the synthetic, there is always something different. And that thing which is different is nearly always in terms of something missing. There is something that cannot be reproduced. Some intangible that cannot be added. And the theory of magnetism would assume that the thing that is missing is the magnetic pole. That man cannot artificially create this magnetic nucleus which is behind every substance that exists. Now, science has been able to reproduce certain forms of this nucleus. But when it reaches a certain degree of complexity, they have failed to carry on. The moment we reach a degree of chemistry in which we transcend elemental processes and go on to the more highly advanced, we suddenly recognize our own ignorance, our inability to add all of the factors or elements necessary to make the thing operate. Something is always missing. And this something that is missing in synthesis cannot be therefore contributed to the soil, to the earth, to the air, to the body of man. And man gradually will come into difficulty due to the starvation of certain essential areas of his magnetic field. Now, when an individual gets into a state of malnutrition physically, he generally strikes out desperately for food. And the same occurs when his magnetic field becomes deranged. He must replenish it in some way. He strikes out to find the necessary media. And out of this, as it becomes a more generally accepted experience, must come the restoration of a study of pure magnetism, a restoration of man's recognition that he is dealing with an abstract and an intangible, but something exceedingly real and necessary to him. The depletion of the body and its magnetic pole brings man again into the presence of his religious experience. He finds himself, for example, perhaps, locked in a very bad situation relating to health. He is locked, probably, at least to a measure, by habit mechanism. He is locked by a complex which he is unable to escape. Now, this complex may not be any different from what it appears to be in the lives of other people. But certain persons react in one way and certain in another way. And in any particular instance, a complex situation, mental or emotional, can produce extraordinary physical complications. Thus, the person, locked psychically, locked magnetically, begins to reveal the physical symptoms of psychosomatic ailments, similar to the causes which are operating in his own life. We might wish to assume that these causes do not operate, but they do. And we may be the best intentioned individuals in the world. We're trying so desperately hard to be wonderful about everything. But at the same time, with all our wonderfulness, we are still pretty nasty about some things. We have a long time getting over it. We may be so sincere and devout that it looks as though we're just about ready for heaven, but we've never been able to control a gossiping tongue. We've never been free from prejudice. We still flare into jealousy, and we're fine until something goes wrong, and then we're not fine anymore. We simply cannot control these facts. And because we cannot control them, we are always punishing the magnetic background of our physical existence. If, therefore, through a religious experience, through a tremendous sense of spiritual exaltation, we are able to send a flash of consciousness, like Bayme's mystical lightning bolt, through our entire psychic life, shattering these negative thoughts, suddenly making a grand acceptance of faith over fear, suddenly resolve with everything that we have to determine a better way of life and live it. And sustained by a tremendous devotion, we may achieve a considerable part of it. In so doing, we may also gain a very rapid recovery from some physical ailment that has beset us. And various shrines of healing all bear witness to the tremendous power of deep personal conviction as a means of altering the magnetic field. One other way in which the field is nearly always better is by relaxation through contemplation. The individual who is able to let go, who is able to discover a certain mystical identity, who is able to be quiet for a few moments, relaxing his own psychic life, and indirectly, but inevitably, relaxing his own physical structure at the same time, will, to the degree that he relaxes, open the channels of energy throughout his body. Thus, in the complete relaxation, he comes the nearest to the complete element of proper function. The individual is most likely to function adequately in a state of relaxation. This does not necessarily mean that he will be most physically active. That is not the problem. It means, however, that the body and all of its structures will be most adequately nourished. And when the time for action comes, he will have the natural reserve of energy for action that nature intended him to have. He will not be forced to act from depletion, which is the case in so many modern individuals. Thus, by relaxation away from tension, emotional, physical, and mental, he accomplishes the adjustment of the magnetic field. And you will perceive in the magnetic experiment that the directions of these currents change, that the intensities of their vibrations change, that they also have a certain chromatic scale, and this likewise changes. And there have yet to be a number of experiments showing the relationship between magnetism and sound, and that it is perfectly possible to hear the changes of magnetic energy by means of delicately constructed instruments. We can hear sickness and health. You can actually listen to the remonstrances of a peptic ulcer. You can listen to the aggravation of an overtaxed liver. You can also listen to that music of the spheres by means of which there comes a healing to all these diseased and injured parts of ourselves. We will ultimately discover that every vibratory instrument that we know can be used to create a sympathetic reaction to the magnetic field. And that magnetism, being the most intimately associated with vibration, that vibration becomes the means of influencing. And by changing its own vibratory poles, we are able to change its effects upon our bodies and our lives. Here is another possible field of therapy for our consideration. Another type of therapy that is gradually developing along magnetic lines to at least a partial degree is the study of psychosomatic dream patterns. We will ultimately find that there is a strong relationship between magnetism and dream form. Magnetism is the subtle stuff that dreams are made of. Magnetism is the material of so volatile a substance that it can be instantly molded and shaped. Thus, in order for a dream to be perceived, even by partially awake inner faculties of vision, it must have some organic structure in consciousness. For example, we know that certain types of dreams can be associated with physical distress. We know that the person with indigestion may have a certain type of dream. We know the body which has been adversely affected by narcotics will be subject to certain hallucinations. Also, we are fully aware of the delirium tremens that accompany advanced alcoholism. The various narcotic drugs will produce illusions and delusions. Toxin will produce illusions and delusions. And there seems to be every reason to believe that your magnetic field is the secret of these phantoms which arise as a result of man's mental and emotional energies forming symbols in the magnetic field. If we are able to carry this further, we shall then see why dreams can be diagnostic and prognostic. We realize how they can reflect or interpret man's mental and emotional existence, and how they can tell of secrets most deeply locked within himself. All this is possible because the dream represents, like the strange snowflake pictures created by frost on glass, they represent energy moving within the magnetic field of the individual. Now, this energy crystallizes along forms which we call dream patterns, and they have meaning. But the reason they have meaning is because thought and emotion have moved energy. And this energy held in certain suspension has a definite effect upon our lives. Well, energy within man, magnetism within the human body, breaks into at least two distinct forms about which we have not too much information, but a little that may stimulate further thought. Magnetic energy either moves or radiates. Therefore, we have forms of magnetic energy which are in constant motion. By this motion, we mean that the vibratory units are not only vibrating, but they are moving in relationship to each other, like water falling in drops over itself. Then there is another form of magnetism which appears more like a diffuse cloud, in which the vibration of the basic unit constitutes the only motion. This type of magnetism does not flow. It ideates. It is a permeating material that sort of drenches things in itself. It becomes a kind of invisible or intangible atmosphere. It can be taken in with breath, which sort of like a cloud or a fog envelops things. This type of energy is comparatively stationary in the body. Paracelsus describes this type of magnetic field as the kind which can be cut with a sharp instrument. And it is because of the danger to this etheric magnetism that when a wound heals, the scar remains, because the scar is in the magnetic field, and that will not get well. It can be covered by plastic surgery, but if it is so concealed, any instrument or person capable of measuring the energy field will still see the scar. It's only its visible part has been obstructed, but beneath the corrected or beneath the area of the plastic surgery, the original scar is still visible. Thus, this form of the energy remains constant. And this type of constant energy is associated with the most elementary functions of the body. This energy carries with it the maintenance of cell life, the maintenance of the essential unit structure of things. Everything that exists has a core of continuing existence, and then a series of moving emanational factors. It has a nature of itself, and then it has a function from itself. And these two forms of magnetism nourish these two essential parts of structure. That which nourishes the form of things is this cloud-like. That which nourishes function is the motion or streaming-like manifestation of magnetism. And this streaming form of magnetism is in constant motion, flowing in through the polarized extremities of man, creating also within the magnetic field a system of circulation, which is very, very important to man. The human being not only has to cast off physical waste, but has to cast off psychic waste. And in getting rid of the psychic waste, we have to depend upon the circulation in the magnetic structure. As this structure corresponds to the magnet, it has poles. And as these poles correspond very closely to the magnetic poles of the Earth, the structure of man's magnetic field is very similar to the Earth, and its uses are the same. We will finally realize that the poles of the Earth, bound into the magnetic processes of the planet, are the basis of the processes of digestion, assimilation, and excretion for the planet itself. It is because of these poles that refuse matter cast off from the planet is finally returned to free space, and also through these poles, the magnetic energies from outside of a planetary field, in this case from the solar field, must return into the planetary magnetic body. So that in this case, the magnetic field functions somewhat like a pair of lungs. It has a double duty. First, to draw in air and circulate it through the body. Then to gather up waste and exhale it out again. In the magnetic field, the energy of the universe is drawn in through the positive pole of the magnet. And the energies wasted, torn down, broken down, the refuse of function. These elements are cast out through the negative pole of the magnetic field, returning again to space, which becomes like the vast ocean, the purifier of all the streams that flow into it. The same occurs with the magnetic field of the individual. This field draws in its own magnetic nutrition. For while the body helps to set up poles for magnetism, the magnetic body, like the physical, has its own sphere of nutrition, must depend upon this sphere, and must in turn contribute something from this sphere to the maintenance of the material body appended to it. It's the same problem exactly as man's mental and emotional life. These forms of life do not depend upon the body, yet man's mental and emotional life will affect the body. And the body is unable to resist the effects of those structures which are superior to itself, and which have, therefore, the absolute power to dominate the body. But as the mind and emotions must have their own food, their own circulation, their own distribution, and their own elimination and excretion, so the vital body has this, and so the physical. The magnetic field, therefore, must clear itself of its own waste. It must, to a degree, support its own nature and the nature of the physical body, and it must form the bridge by means of which the psychic nature communicates with the physical body. For each body or structure that exists, exists not for itself alone, but serves as an instrument between two other bodies, or two other natures. Even as man is not as an instrument complete. For while the human being as a totality has a life of its own, man has also another destiny. That is, he must serve as a mediator between the universe of rational and reasonable principles and the material world in which he lives. Therefore, through man, reason, wisdom, and understanding must be released upon the planet which he inhabits. He is therefore a bridge between an invisible principle and a material world. And energy is the same. Magnetism is a bridge between man's superior nature and his inferior nature. But this bridge is alive, having a nature, quality, and destiny of its own, although it is at present involved in the composite constitution of man. Thus, the development of magnetic theory of medicine is primarily and must be primarily concerned with the conditioning of the magnetic instrument itself. The body cannot directly connect with this instrument. The body of man cannot, of its own will and purpose, affect the magnetic field. The only way it can influence the magnetic field is through the mental and emotional power, which is superior to body and also superior to electrical energy. Thus, we will say that a bad habit of the body cannot affect the magnetic field. But the bad habit of the mind, which caused the bad habit of the body, can affect the magnetic field, because the mental habit is higher and more positive than the magnetism. The mind and the emotions, being superior to energy, are able to control it. Therefore, any mistake in the psychic life will affect the energy field, but a mistake in the body will not. The only way in which the mistake in the body can affect the magnetic field is by a physical accident or the loss of a member. Actually, the psychological stress, therefore, which depletes man, comes into the body from the mental and emotional life. And these mental and emotional pressures, resulting in bad physical habits, it would appear that the physical habit is making the sickness. But it is not the physical habit. It is the psychological attitude causing the habit that is destroying the magnetic balance. Thus, if the individual is angry, and in the course of his anger he has a stroke, we might think at first that this stroke represents the body blocking energy. Such is not the case, however. The body is the victim. The cause of the trouble was the anger that was seated in the mental and emotional life. This prevented the proper function of energy and led to the stroke. Each case, the superior must be responsible for the action of inferior. Man is a mental, spiritual, emotional entity, is therefore at all times responsible for his own magnetic field, and in turn responsible for the action of this field upon his body. And in order to achieve the balance of these factors, he must work from inward control. Now, we think of the man controlling energy. This in itself is a kind of a strange term. For while we equally often hear man making rather boastful remarks about what he's going to do with time and space and energy and distance and all these things, actually, man does not formally control these things, inasmuch as they are universal and therefore cannot be actually controlled by anyone. What we call control is merely our own adjustment to them, an adjustment to the energies which they contribute to our common economy. When we therefore say that we can control and direct magnetic energy, what we mean is that we can either obey or disobey it. We can set certain emotions in process, by means of which the natural action of these energies can be revealed or obscured. When we say we will control emotions, what we really mean is that we will control our own misuse of the emotional agents. Not to control emotion per se. When we say we will control magnetism, we do not mean that we can actually wave this magic wand and cause magnetism to do anything that it does not want to do. What we are simply meaning is that we are able to make use of this energy by obeying it. by learning its laws and adjusting ourselves to its principles. The same thing is the story of the Chinese River. Man living by the side of the Yangtze River depended upon it for many things. This river is like life. He put his water wheel by the side of the river and it ground his grain for him. He went fishing in the river and got his food. He made boats and sailed upon the river. And thereby was able to go from one place to another. But at no time does this mean that man controls the river. We might say, yes, but he can build a dam. And in that way, apparently, he does control the river. But his control of the river is not permanent or real. One by one, the dams are broken by the river. And in time, everything that we build to change the course of the river will be destroyed by the inevitable force of the water itself. Therefore, our sensible program is always to arrange our water wheels so that we will benefit by the natural law of the river. And control means this. It means nothing more than that we have learned how the river can serve us. But we have not changed the nature of the river or actually controlled it. We have used it. If we use it well, the river serves us. If we break the rules of the water, the river destroys us. The river has swept away many of the works of men, even while in another place it was grinding grain for it. So in the energy motions in space, we do not control this energy, but we can variously adapt it to our needs through understanding, through obedience, and through wisdom. We can make ourselves receptive to this energy as we need it. We can come finally to the realization that we must reach in medicine, namely that the universe does want us to be well, and that we will be well when we cease making ourselves sick. That sickness is not actually something that the gods have given man to try his soul. Sickness is simply man's inharmonious adjustment with this great magnetic electric field of energy, which is his magnetic nutrition, the nutrition by means of which what he terms his vitality can be maintained. Vitality is not thought, but energy sustains thought. Vitality is not emotion, but energy sustains emotion. Emotion and thought are conditions by which energy is used or abused. But this energy, of course, is of a superior kind to the energy which we commonly term bodily magnetism. But it is also an energy in space. And all levels of existence, from the spirit to the body, all levels are sustained by an energy on their own level. And the structural forms that exist in those levels are sustained by their energies just as the earth is sustained by the combination of the lunar or humid and solar or germinal principles. Thus as the light and the rain cause all things to grow, so these represent the basic energies necessary for physical development. And each plane has its light and its humidity. And this light humidity has been referred to as the electric magnetic field. These combining make all of the forms growing on their own levels fruitful, cause them to germinate and to come forth into manifestation. Thoughts are born this way, emotions are born this way, bodies are born this way. And it is the duty of the individual to try to understand these energies and forces so that he can use them wisely and develop from them a new and adequate concept of therapy. As we said, the gradual depletion of our world's energies will make it ultimately necessary for man to search in space for nutrition. And this base nutrition is available. And gradually he can supplant the sources of energy around him by direct appeal to the solar energy, to the fragmented lunar energy, which reaches him on a different polarity. He can gradually weave out of the energy substances everything that he needs. For actually, matter is only a kind of drop that falls out of energy, squeezed out of it, in the process of natural unfoldment. Bodies are therefore primarily merely masses of minerals, sustained, held together, made animate by energy. And thereby, having become energized, they are ensouled by powers needing this energized form for the expression of still superior powers and talents. So the body becomes the instrument, and magnetism is the fuel. And man, as soul and mind, rides in this instrument or vehicle. Just as surely as your combustion motor releases certain forms of energy, so the combustion process of energy is present everywhere in the structure of living things. Some persons are born with the ability to communicate magnetic energy. Others probably can attain the skill to do this. Instruments can be devised, and it is possible, again, to create a synthetic. It is possible for man to create, by his knowledge of electricity and electronics in general, a synthetic instrument for the production of the magnetic energies necessary for life. But the question is going to be, what will be missing in the synthetic? This can be very, very important, because that which is generally missing is the subtle part. And the subtle part is that which is least evident and most important. Now, in the concept of the creation of a magnetic field by artificial means, by a synthetic, what might be the element most likely to be missing? That which is the most abstract and abstruse, namely the element by means of which mind, emotion, consciousness are able to ensoul the magnetic field. That the magnetic field could be produced to the degree that it would sustain the body is not inconceivable, but that it would at the same time constitute the bridge between consciousness and body might be the problem that would face all synthetics in the field of electrical chemistry. The difficulty in finding out the nature of this link. If such a condition should arise, we might then gradually find that man's relationship to body would be slowly broken. Not immediately, probably, because his own natural energies would sustain it for a considerable time, but in the course of 500 or 1,000 or 10,000 years. If man became continually dependent upon a synthetic and no longer was able to provide the natural elements of the compound, the link between body and consciousness could slowly be broken, which would mean that the body would no longer be a suitable instrument for consciousness. While this is occurring, however, we would probably develop a whole new group of ailments, very serious ones, which would be simply telling us that we were breaking a rule, and breaking a very serious rule. In the last 25 years, we have developed a whole sequence of ailments, which were comparatively little known, or not nearly so strenuous in the past as they have become in more recent years. In spite of all of our advance in science, we're not becoming healthier. The reason why is that we are achieving a synthetic progress, a progress in which our advancements are not complete, not balanced. And with all our progress, we are not assuring man of the controlling power of his own consciousness over his magnetic and material body. Medicine can force the body into certain situations, temporarily alleviating symptoms. Various forms of specialized nutritional elements can temporarily stimulate the magnetic field. But unless these processes are in exact harmony with nature, unless finally all science becomes the handmaiden of nature, unless every process is an exact and identical replica of total nature, we cannot be sure of the result. Because nature is a very wonderful and mysterious compound of circumstances. And man is a product of the involving processes of countless laws, many of which he knows nothing about. Consequently, it is always dangerous as man's various developments cause him to move away from nature. It is always dangerous because it removes him from the harmony of the relationship of magnetic nutrition and physical nutrition. He can bluff his way to the maintenance of his physical existence, but he cannot bluff his magnetic field. He knows no way of influencing it, no way of changing its force, no way of commanding it to obey him, and he has developed as yet no synthetic which will supply it with the energies which it requires. Therefore, if he breaks its rules, he is bound to find an increasing pattern of physical discomfort and disorder. This usually precedes discovery, for man becoming gradually aware that he is making a mistake begins to concern himself with finding out what's wrong. And it is very well possible, with the direct thinking that we have today, that in a few years we will begin the research of this magnetic equation. In fact, in a way it is already being done. But that the work shall spread is not at all unlikely. And that ultimately we shall realize that this is the next step in the vast unfoldment of the problem of nutrition, which will be forced upon us by the problems that we are now facing, and still more so by the population problem that lies ahead. We must solve the problem of how we are sustained as living creatures. And to solve that problem, we must analyze and understand the principle of magnetic nutrition. When we understand that, we will be much safer than we are today. In the meantime, not being in full possession of the facts, the one thing always to remember is, when you want to help the magnetic field to function best, relax. Try to prevent false tensions from exhausting energy and make yourself receptive to life. This you can often do and find it brings a quick relief from special fatigue. In fact, that is one of the secrets of sleep, but it is also involved a man being able to live every day in a relaxed rather than a tense state. Tension locks the field from the physical body. Relaxation opens the context, and helps us to live in a more healthy way. Well, time is up, so it's now all time to go home and relax.